soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey! Turn it up.
For Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Has this team got the fans completely buy in? And I imagine all the success certainly has helped.
Well, look, there's a lot of buy in right now because you have a winning team. Okay, but if you're going to look at the entire season, the Dynamo. We're 29th out of 29th in attendance. There is no reason why that stadium shouldn't look like that game in and game out with the quality product that's now being put on the field. You got a lot of people now covering the team, which is great, that are on for the ride. I'm going to challenge them in Houston to start covering Major League Soccer comprehensively throughout the year.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We're not going to mess around here. We're going to get right into it with the general manager of the Houston Dynamo, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. He is Dynamo GM, Pat Onset. Pat, thanks very much as always.
Thanks for having me on again.
All right, we're going to try to do a first here. We're going to try to do a 15-minute interview.
Good luck.
You and me usually get going.
I wish us both luck.
All right, let's do it. Here we go. Number one, Chicharito. We heard Hector Herrera come out, talk about it. What's your thoughts on that?
Listen, he's a fantastic player, he unfortunately had a horrible injury, toward kind of the end of the season or middle of the season. So I think there's a few things. One is has he got goals in him? Probably. I think he's a like I said before, he's a great player, great career. The issue I think for us is going to be twofold. One is going to be the cap situation for us. Where would we fit him in? I mean, most likely he's a DP if he comes in. And so how do we fit that in? And then number two is, what's his health going to be like? And is he going to be available at the beginning of the season, mid-season, or down the final stretch? So I think there's a lot of questions. He's certainly a guy that won't go unnoticed or under the radar. But at this stage, we'll have to see what happens. But I don't want people there holding their breath saying this is the guy that's going to save us. I think the injury is going to cause the bigger issue for him. It's going to take some time for that to heal. We walked through that with Brad Smith this year. Took a little bit longer than we thought it would for him to heal off his ACL as well. He's back to solid now, but probably took an extra 3 months longer than we thought it would.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point. People forget you have to be able to see if Chicharito is still explosive after a serious injury like this, right? And I think people are just assuming everything's going to be perfect. He is an older player.
Yeah, those are tough to come back from. They're not easy. I mean, people do come back from them. This isn't career ending. These are injuries that people come back from all the time. Lots of guys in our league had fantastic careers that come back from one, two of them. But excuse me, it's a tough one, and it's his movement. That's the key for him. He's not a stationary striker that holds the ball up and just a big lug in the box. He's a guy that thrives off of fantastic movement in the box, fantastic movement toeing the line, looking to get behind. We know he doesn't have like the top end speed that he used to have, but he's still pretty quick. And the question, like you said, is what is that? Does that affect him coming back off an injury like this? Who knows? But yeah, I think everybody in the league, if you can get Chicharito even a year ago, I think everyone in the league would be jumping at him.
He's Dynamo GM Pat Onset. This should have been the first question. It should have been first. Congratulations, by the way, you're in the Western Conference final. I know you are looking ahead, and in the past, I think what we've seen in Houston is kind of reactive club. I know you're way ahead of things already now, and as much as you're focused in on the Western Conference final, you're looking at your roster for next year's. How complicated of an offseason could this be?
Yeah, it is. It's difficult, and when you have success, players are going to come into the office rightfully so. Some of them have deserve a conversations, and we'll see how that goes. So a lot of that's unpredictable until the season finishes. And having said that too, there's now teams in the league that look and go, I like that player off of Houston. Certainly a lot more people calling now than we had last year at this time. So there's some things that we'd like to change, and there's a lot of things we'd like to keep the same. We'll be very happy with our group. But I'm also a big believer that we need to make change for the better of the team and try to move this team along and keep improving year in, year out. And I think the players understand that as well, and that's what they're fighting hard in the field for.
I know this is a difficult question, but if you put a percentage of how many players of the nucleus of this team you want to retain, what is that, 80%, 85%?
That's difficult. I mean, I think a lot of it will depend. Well, you know, we're tied up against the cap, so a lot of it will depend on what that means and who we bring back and who we don't. It'll also depend on a lot of things and on how the next couple of games go as well. And for us, I think we have some options and some ideas out there, but at this stage, you know, what we want to do is make sure this group has the best chance to win on Saturday.
He's Dynamo General Manager Pat Onstad. By the way, we're going to have the call of the Dynamo at LAFC right here on ESPN 97.5, and our pregame show will start at 8 o'clock. How about Coco? I'm assuming you're fielding legitimate offers for him.
Legitimate? We're feeling feelers is what we're doing so far. But he's been outstanding for us. I thought he had a great game against Kansas City the other day, I think. His experience with over the two legs against Costa Rica was excellent. I mean, the through pass he made in game one on the run was phenomenal. So I think he's developing that side of his game, the offensive kind of final play. It's getting better. It's still ways for him to go to be a reliable kind of a pocket type midfielder. But in the end, we also know his best position is probably box to box, you know, and we haven't been able to play him there, and that's a credit to Hector Herrera and Artur, who are both had great seasons as well. So we're very fortunate. We have an abundance of riches in those positions. So we'll see what happens with him. But there's no secrets here. Well, like I said, we've been in contact with his agent, with the Coco. We're all on the same page on what we're looking for and where we want him to go. And we'll see if we can get that done in the offseason or if it's something that maybe happens in the summer.
Speaking of hitting the pocket, boy, Nelson Quiñones was hitting the pocket in the first half and Sporting couldn't adjust to him. Yeah. You know, at some point, some of these are going to start going in, but you have to be thrilled with the development of this young man. It's been exceptional. And that's two ways. I mean, the defensive work that he's done alongside of Franco Escobar has been exceptional as well.
Yeah, I would give him a lot of credit on the defensive side. I don't think a lot of people give him credit for that. I think he's growing leaps and bounds on that side. I think he's still developing his offensive side, but I think Ben and his coaching staff have done a great job. And you know, I think we were, if you ask Asher Mendelsohn and I in probably April, you know, we were pretty doubtful that we were going to pick the option up. And he started turning a corner around that time. And that was, due to the staff spending some extra time with him after sitting down, showing him video, making sure he was ready to go on the field. So it was fantastic to see that turnaround for him.
Pat Onstad joining us, Dynamo General Manager. Again, we can't say this enough. What a season for the Houston Dynamo. They're in the Western Conference Final, and they will take on LAFC at LAFC. All right, there's people reporting that the four DPs is going to go through. I know there's a governor's meeting coming up, but is that something that you would welcome, you know, as a GM from your standpoint?
Yeah, I think for us, when there's changes, there's always inevitably going to be changes to our rosters and rules and regulations. I mean, there are smaller tweaks. Going to 4DPs is a big one. We'll see what happens with what the owners come back with. You know, the owners come back with the rules and we follow them and go from there. I'll preferably if I had to be honest, was a little more time to look and give us some time to plan for that. But in the end, if that's what they decide, then we go from there.
So this is something we're not used to around here, being this deep in the playoffs in recent times. It has been a spectacular season. And I'll say this, and I'll shout this from the mountaintops. You yourself personally, your staff, Ben Olsen, onto the player, you guys have been exceptional. And this is an exceptional watch from the outside, aesthetically. This is so fun to watch. It's rejuvenated my calling of the game personally, right, which that doesn't matter that much. But
no,
I can tell you it's affected me personally. And then to watch an architect like Hector Herrera kind of orchestrating things, it has been spectacular. But because you're so extended now, you're going to have a really short off season before you got to get into CONCACAF Champions League play.
Yeah, we are. But I would say compared to last season where we made 17 changes, or I guess it was 15 up until the summer, it was This we won't be making. I can guarantee that when you say percentages, we won't be doing 50% turnover. So that'll be a little different. And we've done our homework, and we're ready to start making moves when we need to. But we also, you know, we believe in this group, and these guys have changed the culture of the club. You have to give credit, as much as you give credit to Ben and his group and support staff. You know, Craig Devine, Paul Caffrey. These guys, you know, off the field, and, you know, Asher Mendelson, Nick Koba, everybody who's done great work behind the scenes is, you know, you have to give credit to these players. Ultimately, it's the players on the field. They make the difference. And if they're not bought in, they won't make the difference. And they have been, and give them credit, that they've done that. And we want to make sure that, these guys get an opportunity to keep coming back and, you know, supporting the work that we've done here, and then hopefully go and continue to hoist trophies.
Let's give credit to your medical staff too, because, man, you guys have been healthy this year. I mean, Artur's logged ridiculous minutes. Yeah. You know the health aspect, that's been exceptional, right? Yeah, you got to really feel good about that.
It's twofold now. And the old days, I think you say, oh, your trainer's been, you know, your athletic therapist is amazing. And I give a shout out to old Bruce Morgan, who was around for forever with our club. But we now have a huge staff. You know, Craig Devine's our director of sports medicine, but he works hand in hand with our head of performance, which is Paul Caffrey, who's been here for a long time. So Paul's pretty happy with the way things have turned around. He's kind of lived the downside as well. But the two of them together, you know, we train properly. Ben adheres to what we're trying to do in training, and that helps in the recovery, rest and recovery, and the treatment from the medical staff has been outstanding. So I'm really, really happy with that. Those two departments in our club, and I think they made a big difference in why I've been successful this year.
Today, we were invited down to a wonderful event that you guys put on with yourself and Jessica O'Neill and Alex Singer, Ted Siegel, obviously the owner. I thought this was exceptional stuff with the media. You know, not to reveal too much here, but you did say some things that were really, really interesting. And there was a time where you were talking about the similarities between this team and the 06 and 07. And I think this is something we've said on the air during broadcast that, you know, there is one thing in common with these two teams. There's a lot of differences, but boy, the unity around the team. And you had said very early on, we got to bring winners in, and you did that.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, I think if you pinpoint, instead of going around saying we got this guy right, that guy right, what I think we did really well and got right was the mentality of the group. You know, Eric Shevchenko, who's one, you know, was part of what the Invincibles, I think, with Celtic, and, you know, Franco Escobar scoring the great header the other day, but he does that every playoff run. When people look around, you know, we were even going back 2 years, you know, the Steve Clark, these guys that have a winning mentality and have been around it and done it before, I think has made a huge difference for us in the terms of the culture in the locker room. That belief has kind of bled through. I think also the staff, you know, I'll go back again, but the staff that we brought in have been experienced winners before too. That bleeds throughout the entire club. And I'm really, really proud of the work that everyone has done to contribute to where we are today.
Dynamo General Manager Pat Ons said, Ben Olsen seems to have a fantastic relationship with Hector Herrera.
Yeah, he does. He's done well. And in the end, if your top DP is not getting along with your head coach, that's a problem. And so Ben's experienced enough to know, like, listen, in the end, I got to make this work regardless of one way or the other. And fortunately, Hector's a pretty easy guy to get along with. And there's times, you know, when they disagree, but they disagree in a really respectful way. And the two of them have developed this wonderful relationship. Part of it is actually both of their kids are in our academy. And so every night they're kind of sitting there watching their kids train. So they've developed this kind of relationship in Spanglish, I think, over time. But I think that's also part of this, you know, this group that Ben's brought together. You know, everyone here has a family. Everyone has here outside of soccer. And I think we all respect that with one another. That's a big part of why this group's kind of like a family.
I think that really shines through to everybody on the outside, including me, you know, that there is this nice unity and a family aspect to it as much as possible. Now, I know you guys are really looking to the future in a lot of areas. I would assume that there's a big focus on the academy and one day fielding three Houston kids in a starting lineup and getting into the buying and selling game and the cheap labor game, quite frankly, when it comes to a roster.
Yeah, I mean, for us, I think to take the next level as a club and to sustain this success we've had this year, I'd love to say next year for sure we're going to go in an Open Cup, we're going to make a Final Four. It's difficult. It's difficult. Do I think next year we have a group that'll make the playoffs? Absolutely. That, you know, we will strive for that every year that I'm here. That'll be our first and number one goal. And that bleeds back to Dominic Kinnear. That was his number one goal. He'd write down every year and said, make the playoffs. You give yourself a chance to win. And I thoroughly believe that. But going back to your question is, yes, for us to be sustainable, we need to start developing players here from the city of Houston. I think Tony Vigil has done a really good, his first year has done a really good job of kind of turning this thing around and getting the boat kind of pointing in the right direction. You can feel there's some momentum in our group, but we still haven't produced guys yet. So when I think we're humming and when we're ready to go is when we've got, you know, to your point, 2 to 3 guys every game where we're penciling them in or even penning them in and saying these are our starters and these guys are going on from here and using us as a stepping stone to get up to European leagues. And that'll take some time. But I believe in a city of 7+ million people and all the different ethnic backgrounds we have here, that there's no reason that we can't produce players for our first team.
Yeah, great soccer city. We're talking to Pat Onstad, Dynamo general manager. Sebas Ferreira not scoring a lot of goals in Brazil. Yeah. You know, I know you're monitoring this. How does that make you look at that situation?
Yeah, it's frustrating. You know, we'd hoped the club down there certainly had indicated he was going to get a lot of playing time. He hasn't gotten that. That's been a little frustrating. I mean, we put him down on loan, and literally within 2 weeks, they signed a 32-year-old forward as a Barati, I believe it is. I'm not sure the name, but he's got all the predominantly the majority of the playing time. He has appeared a little bit of late and had some flashes, set up a goal the other day. I think he has a couple of assists now, but we'd like to see him banging some goals and see what happens. I mean, it'd be good for his confidence, whether he's back here in January or elsewhere. But, you know, we're hoping this thing can – he can get turned around in terms of the way he's playing. We're in contact. He and I actually text back and forth once in a while, but excuse me. He's frustrated too. He wants to play, you know, he's a professional athlete and he wants to be scoring goals. So we'll see what the solution is in the next couple of months.
Pat, listen, we've talked to a PR specialist, top man, Edgar Velez. At some point, I think you and Ben Olsen are going to come in studio for some Argentine empanadas at the end of the season. Perfect. At some point, perfect, which we are going to know is going to end after December 9th. So at that point, we'll have a little get together in there. We'll let you guys really discuss and talk about the season to the fan base. And as always, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for your time. And thanks for being so candid. These are fun interviews.
No, I appreciate it, Glenn. I appreciate your support and glad that you got a smile on your face now calling our games again. That's great. That's good.
Pat, thank you very much.
Yeah, take care.
All right, that's Dynamo GM Pat Onstad. Great stuff there with him, and we always appreciate him coming on. Look, if you're a Dynamo fan, he basically went over a whole boatload of things there in a quick 15 minutes that I think all of you, many of you, had pushed on me to ask him as well. So there you go. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got Chad Riley, the head coach of Notre Dame, coming up, who's in the Elite Eight of the NCAA tournament, all brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As everybody knows, the NCAA college season's winding down. Our next interview brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. A man that grew up playing the game here in Houston as a young man, Hurricane Soccer Club. Went on to play at Notre Dame in college, assistant coach in a number of places, including Dartmouth under the legendary Bobby Clark, and now has come back and is the head coach of Notre Dame, who this weekend, I believe it's the Elite Eight, will take on Indiana. He is Chad Riley. Chad, what a nice opportunity for us to catch up with you and for Houston to get reminded that we've got so many like yourself doing it on a bigger stage.
No, awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's just first talk about, you know, you grew up in Houston, Bear Creek Park, all these parks where all the youth game is played. Now you're coaching Notre Dame, but you went there as a player. You were a very successful player there. Just tie the two together, playing there, coaching there, what it means, the pride, and maybe how that pride might go a little bit deeper.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, for me, it is a place now. I've spent most of my life as a player, assistant coach, and now back as a head coach. And I think so it does. It's, you know, basically in a soccer sense, it's my club, right? It's and so what comes a little bit more passion, a little bit more meaning, which makes the victory sweeter and the defeats a little bit harder to handle when it's your club and you're representing. But at the same time, that feeling of just being the steward of the program and trying to do my best to leave it better than I found it, which is a little bit tough because you mentioned Bobby Clark, my coach, did a wonderful job of building it up, and Mike Berticelli before that. So it's we've got a lot of proud tradition, and now we're just trying to add to it. And I feel so blessed to be able to be back at Notre Dame and working with this team at this school.
Yeah, those are two historic names in the college game, yeah. Clark and Berticelli. Tell me what you learned from Bobby Clark, you know, in a nutshell, maybe a Cliff Notes version, but what are some of the things that, you know, really stick with you in your mind that still apply to the college game today?
Yeah, I think, you know, the big things that stick out to me was that he was an educator first. You know, we were very professional with what we did, but it was all about developing as a person, as a team. And then that kind of leads to the biggest thing that he instilled in me is that people can get better. You know, I think a lot of us think of talent and you find it early and then you only develop the talent, but I think everybody can get better. And I think that's something that Bobby really hammered into all of us as players. And then as a coach, just to see teams and individuals develop over time. And then I think candidly, this is a team that, you know, I'm staking my career on being able to develop players over 4 years. And, you know, it's a team that for the last year has just grown so much. We knew it was there. We were a young team last year. And I think we've developed over the year through a lot of hard work and self-reflection. And so I think, you know, those two things. And then I think the secret ingredient of every team is to always, like, whether you call it culture or team spirit, I think to tend to that and to make sure you never sacrifice, to the spirit that you want to create within your group. And so I think those three things are the things he really left with me.
Chad Riley, head coach in Notre Dame, grew up playing here in Bear Creek Park in the Houston area, another one of our proud alumni from the Houston soccer community that's doing big things. It's you know, it's remarkable how many of you and your teammates and other guys you played against in the Houston area that have continued in the game in a variety of aspects, and one of them being college soccer coaching.
Yeah, it is wild.
You stay in touch with any of those guys?
I do. You know, Chris Bondi and I worked together for a couple of years at Dartmouth, and then obviously he's at UConn now, so I see him all the time. And then, as I mentioned, you know, it feels like a long time ago since I was running around Bear Creek Park. But even if you remember Edwin Rivera, now those guys' kids are coming to camps I'm running, so it makes me feel super, super old. But it's so fun to see, you know, these guys still involved. And then, yeah, Coach Chris Bondi and I keep in good touch.
Listen, you put together the hard work, though, to become a head coach. I mean, look, you did the assistant route. You did it in a couple of different markets, St. John's, Dartmouth. You got around a lot of coaches. You had a lot of influences. I have to think that makes you feel fully capable and obviously confident in the role that you're in. Not that you don't still learn anymore, but yeah, Still pretty confident. I mean, you've got quite the dossier. It's not like you were handed a head coaching position.
Yeah, exactly. No, I appreciate that. And obviously you always helped with calling your old soccer buddy from New Jersey to get me at St. John's, which was such a good learning experience under Coach Dave Mazur there. Just, you know, similar kind of way as teams played, but similar outcomes, but just did things slightly differently. So I've been so lucky to work with some great coaches. And then, you know, you always have to make the shift from making suggestions to decisions. But, you know, you do, after you go through these phases as a head coach now, after, crazily enough, this is my 11th season as a head coach. And so you start to hopefully continue, like you said, to develop and every year reflect and think, well, what could I do a little bit better? Can I grow a little bit tactically? Are there, you know, different training methodologies we need to do? But that's the fun part about soccer, is that you can keep learning forever.
Yeah, no question about that. I learn from it every day. We're talking to Chad Riley, the head coach of Notre Dame. All right, let's just take that 11 years, that your lens over the course of those 11 years. How have you seen the college game on the men's side change?
I mean, I think it's night and day. I mean, I don't know when the shift actually happened, but, you know, the quality of teams across the board now, where it's just, you know, it's like Indiana, right? Weirdly, this year they're not seeded, but they go and they knock off top seeded teams, and they're a good team. But just top to bottom, yeah, it's night and day from even when I played, but even when I started as a head coach, and just the quality of players in the from the youth soccer guys coming through it in the U.S. and then just the sheer volume of international players that are coming over have made it an unbelievably high standard. And then the part that I disagree a little bit with, to be honest, is it's just gotten a little older. Like, you know, we're playing against 25-year-olds, and they're like, what are 25-year-olds playing college soccer for? So, yeah. But on the flip side of it, it does make it better in a way. And I think I just see my teams and my players grow and then being able to still fight their way onto MLS rosters. And I think that's a testament to how much the game's grown from a quality standpoint in the last few years.
There is quite a difference between an 18-year-old and a 24-year-old, maturity-wise, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Talking to Chad Riley, head coach of Notre Dame. They knocked off Kentucky in the NCAA tournament, just knocked off Western Michigan 4-2 on penalty kicks. They had a 27th-minute red card. That game went overtime. That was a slugfest. And they will play Indiana this Saturday, who they played earlier in the season and drew 1-1 with. So obviously it's got to be a different Indiana at this point and a different Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we had it was funny. We were watching some video back. Our goalie had tweaked his knee and couldn't kick the ball. So he was actually throwing the ball. It was odd. And then we were down two center midfielders in that game too, that I know will be very excited to play them again. And then, like you said, yeah, they've tweaked some things and are a little bit different, but I do think they're a team that we're familiar with. And, you know, we hope to use that to our advantage.
So this is a great sort of in-state rivalry here. I mean, it's Todd Yeagley, it's Indiana, the history with his father, Jerry. It's Notre Dame, who's got a tremendous history. I mean, I got to think this is kind of like the Indiana State local derby, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think maybe the game's already sold out, so we're trying to make sure there's a lot of blue and gold in the stands. But, you know, Indiana being the state university, and obviously we're in Indiana, they get tremendous support. And yeah, we play every year during the regular season. We play in the spring. And then, you know, in a lot of ways, we're trying to, you know, every year, how do we chip away and build our legacy that can get closer to matching theirs? And so I think there's certainly a program that we aspire to chase.
Indiana coming in, Notre Dame will be at home, third straight game at home. By the way, Chad's team at Notre Dame beat Clemson, Virginia, Duke, Virginia Tech, unbelievable. And your ACC, you were undefeated in the regular season. I mean, this is quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, no, it's nothing you go out saying you know you're going to do. This group's tough, and I think they showed a lot of that grit and composure a couple of nights ago. But it's been a great schedule to prepare us, and the guys so far have handled it so well.
You know, the fact that you told me that the sending off was in the 27th minute, that's a lot of soccer to play. Of course, this is an NCAA tournament game. There's finality here. I mean, that's a big blow to suffer that early in a game. Do you train a lot with 10 men at any point to kind of be ready for that moment, or is that kind of an afterthought?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you've got, you know, last year, I think we had some moments, and every once in a while you do it, but it isn't something you train a ton, you know, just because it's so rare. You try to touch on it in preseason, some situational things that might happen. It's maybe something we should train a little bit more now that that it's happened. But no, I think, you know, you just sort of, they go back to sort of more your low block principles. Where you struggle a little bit is the attacking side of it, and so you try to solve that with, like, okay, you know, do we get some personnel that can maybe handle these individual moments a little bit better? So but no, not a huge amount of preparation goes into it.
All right, for those listening in tonight, Chad led Notre Dame last year to the College Cup. Is it Cary, North Carolina again this year, or
It's in Louisville. It's at Louisville City Stadium. Yeah.
Okay. Very, very good venue. So it'll be at Louisville this year. I guess the women are in Cary, North Carolina this year.
Yep.
You mentioned that you were a young team last year and you achieved, got to the College Cup final. Frankly, I thought you were the better team in your semi. I watched the game. But having gone through that already, I have to think that these guys are pretty seasoned for this.
Yeah, they are. No, I do. I definitely think that they've been through it. They've got the experiences. They've got the disappointment that sort of drives them. And then I think they've got the belief. I think that's the most important thing. You want to have that experience, but they have the belief, so they're not fazed by much.
Chad, Matthew Rue and Eno Ento, 20 goals between the two. These guys score a lot of your goals. You're averaging over two goals a game. You're conceding less than one. Take me into your two goal scorers and maybe about their uniqueness, how they play the game, some of their characteristics.
Yeah, I think they dovetail one well with one another. And Eno's from England, grew up kind of in the Derby County youth system. Actually saw us play when every 4 years you get to take a foreign trip as a team. So he was a young guy at Derby. We played there. And so he saw us. He's a fantastic student. And then obviously came over here. And he's your kind of classic number nine striker that stretches the game, really good in the box. Great finisher, good movement in the box. And then Matthew Rue's kind of more of your number 10 that actually can play as a nine as well. So he can be the guy in the pocket. He can stretch the game. But he's a all around just quality player that has a real nose for goal. And he's a little bit one of the exact like a 10 that scores goals. And so I think they work really well with one another. And Rue's just getting back. We're hoping he'll be at full strength. He had a kind of tweaked hamstring leading up, but and kind of worked through these last couple games. But I think we'll see a fully fit Rue this next game.
Where does most of your recruiting occur? I'm sure it's in a variety of places, but with your ties to Houston, I'm just wondering, do you ever look to Houston? I mean, are Houston players a fit for South Bend, Indiana?
Yeah, exactly. You always, it's a little making sure they understand the cold, but yeah, we certainly look at Houston. Though weirdly, we end up with more Dallas kids. I don't know why. I don't know if Notre Dame just has had a more of a pull. Our footprint is pretty national. It kind of matches just who ends up coming to school. So New Jersey, California, Texas, and then kind of the states that touch Indiana are our main sort of feeding grounds.
Your playing style, in your words, if it's all working well against Indiana, what does it look like to Chad Riley?
Yeah, I think, you know, we want to have a comprehensive, we want to be good in all phases. And I think, you know, we always say with the ball, we want to control the game, but have purpose behind it. We want to create attacks and not just count passes, but we do want to control the game. And so I think you'll see good possession, but always looking for those little weak links, not just counting the passes. And then we want to press them and turn the ball over and then transition well. I think that, has been a thing. We've grown a lot in our possession the last year or so. And then, but then I think we've always had good pressing, good transition. So now can we put those two things together? And then being switched on set pieces, I think you want to be good defensively there. And then on our own set pieces, we want to be dangerous as well.
As a team now in modern soccer, I mean, you really have to be able to play, I guess, tactically a number of different ways now, right? I mean, it's what we see in MLS. It's what we see pretty much everywhere. You really can't be one-dimensional, right?
No, exactly. And I think it's been a huge growth, like we talked about over the last 11 years, is that, you know, everybody sort of used to play the same way, whereas now teams play all different ways. And so we've tried to have a, you know, our way of doing things, but then being able to adapt to whether it's a 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2 or a diamond, and then the same thing with how they're pressing us. And so it's amazing how much more tactically savvy the players are now once we get them because of the kind of varied playing styles that they play against coming through the youth ranks.
All right, you got a lot of prideful history there. You got guys who've gone on to play professionally, a number of players. So one I've really watched a lot in our neck of the woods here in Austin is John Gallagher.
Yep.
And, of course, is a converted left back from the striker position. Ended up scoring more goals there than he was when he was playing at striker. A word on him or two and about what
he was kind of in between. So he played for Bobby and I was there. But I think he's had an amazing career and he's been a great resource for some of especially our strikers. And actually he got decently close with Jack Lynn, who won the MLS Next MVP award for whatever the second division's called. But yeah, he's a dynamic and he's another example of what all our guys aspire to be, that, you know, a great student, great person. And then obviously chasing their dream, playing professional soccer, good habits, good pro. But yeah, he's been a wonderful mentor. And then I actually just got an email last night from a retired guy now, but he was an MLS All-Star national team guy, Matt Beasler. He's another one that.
There you go. Ooh, there's a name right there. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He played a year at Austin his last year. So.
Not to mention a successful World Cup on the world stage, too.
Exactly,
yeah, I remember
exactly.
That World Cup with him and Graham Zusi from Sporting Kansas City.
Exactly.
the percentage of guys on your roster that make it very clear to you that they want to be pros, is that 100%?
It's probably, you know, I'd say out of every class, that's 75-80%.
Yeah.
That want to do it for sure.
And how much MLS do you think these guys are watching? Do you think they watch a lot of it?
They do. Yeah. They're soccer junkies. And I think obviously knowing the, a lot of the guys that, that are playing in the league. And then I'm lucky all of my staff played a little bit in the league. And then, a guy you probably called some games with is my director of ops, Chris Rolfe, who played for the Fire, DC United, played for the national team. So, we make sure they're MLS fans for sure.
Yeah. Excellent player, Chris Rolfe. No question. He's Chad Riley. By the way, I knew a soccer junkie when he was a little kid. He was born in 1982. His name was Chad Riley. It does not surprise me that you're still in the game. It does not surprise me you're as successful as you are. Chad, best of luck against Indiana. I know a lot of your former local teammates here in the Houston area are going to love hearing you on this interview. So thank you very much for doing this.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, man.
All right. So Chad Riley and Notre Dame will take on Indiana. The other quarters are West Virginia, Loyola Marymount, I believe, North Carolina, Oregon State, Stanford, and Clemson. That's all happening this weekend. We'll take a break. That's great stuff there from a former local player going on to do great things at Notre Dame as the head coach. He's Chad Riley, another part of our Houston soccer community. All right, we'll take a break here. By the way, Hugh O'Connor's out on I-10, Marquee Entertainment Center. That's where you go to watch soccer matches, real pub feel out there, great whiskey offering, great beer offering. Hugh O'Connor's Pub. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We got more to come.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment of the show tonight. As everybody saw today, Hector Herrera named to the best 11. I think we all kind of figured that was going to happen. The transformation... the influence that he has had on the Houston Dynamo club culture, the club, both on and off the field, has been exceptional to go along with everything from the general manager, Pat Onstad, the owner, Ted Siegel, and the entire staff working behind the scenes. But Herrera has been a pure joy to watch here in Houston. He's a superstar in any sport, whether it's the NFL, MLB, or NBA. Best kept secret in Houston, maybe Hector Herrera. Anyway, wanted to re-air the interview from last week. Here's Hector. Interview with Hector Herrera, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Hector, I sense that you're really enjoying this season in Major League Soccer. You seem to be playing with a joy. Is that true?
Yes, no te creas que estás disfrutando mucho de esta temporada, que estás jugando con una alegría distinta. ¿Es verdad esto?
Sí, estoy muy contento por lo que estoy viviendo, por el momento que está pasando el equipo y disfrutando mucho de mis compañeros de la ciudad. Me siento más adaptado y eso creo que es la alegría que se está notando dentro de la cancha también.
Absolutely, Ben. I think you can tell just how overall I'm enjoying the environment around the group, the way we're playing, how the results were also coming along the way. I think this year, it's definitely noticeable just with the more than the results on the field, but also just the environment around the group itself.
Sí, obviamente que también tiene mucho que ver, ¿no? Pero bueno, yo creo que es más la alegría que tengo fuera de la cancha, como el disfrutar de los compañeros, de la calidad que hay aquí, entonces. Hace que yo tenga también más libertad y más alegría al jugar.
That has a lot to do with it, Glenn. I think it's more so the joy I have off the field with this group. I enjoy the time I have with my teammates, and I think that really resonates on the field when you see us step on across the line here once the whistle blows.
You've played at so many big clubs, Hector. You know, let's start Pachuca, Porto. On to Atletico Madrid, the Mexican national team. Would you say this is the most freedom as a footballer you've ever had when it comes to that role?
Que si en ese perfil o en la posición que juegas, si esa temporada es pues uno donde saco tanta libertad que tienes de jugar como gustas.
Creo que el la felicidad de jugar, de disfrutar tanto del juego, nunca la había tenido como la tengo ahora, ¿no? Es verdad que en el Pachuca, en el Porto, en el Atlético, en la selección, he tenido momentos muy buenos en el cual disfrutaba mucho y estaba muy bien, pero no tenía esa experiencia o esa madurez de ver el juego de otra manera o disfrutar de otra manera como la tengo ahora o siento que la tengo ahora, ¿no? Siempre he dicho que me hubiese encantado poder disfrutar en otros equipos el jugar como lo estoy haciendo aquí en Houston.
The joy of playing and the joy of just kind of being on the field, does that help on high land? I mean, sure, I've had great times and memorable moments with Pachuca, Porto, Atletico, national team as well, but there's just a different way of enjoying the way we're playing and kind of the experience that kind of comes with it. So I think I've mentioned it before that this is definitely a new experience for me in terms of just being able to fully enjoy my time on the field.
Well, Hector, it's truly been a joy for all of us to watch you play the game. I can assure you that. Can you speak to the relationship with Artur on the field and what a wonderful combination you two have formed and what he allows you maybe to do?
Hablando de Artur, pues cómo va esa relación, cómo se han desarrollado como jugadores y tus amigos, que pues ayuda en lo que hacen dentro de la cancha.
Más allá de ser mi compañero ahí en el medio campo, creo que fuera tenemos una muy, muy buena relación que está creciendo cada día más, ¿no? Somos muy buenos amigos, creemos y pensamos muchas cosas igual. Y creo que eso facilita después dentro de la cancha el hablarnos, el asociarnos y el poder ayudar al equipo, ¿no? Creo que se ha convertido en un jugador muy importante para el equipo, para mí, para darme esa libertad que tal vez el equipo me deja hacer y yo puedo aprovecharlo también.
More than just being my teammate, he's a good friend. I think our relationship is just still developing and still growing, just given that this is the first year that we're getting to know each other. And I think we see the world in a very similar way. I think you see that how it translates on the field as well. He's a very important player for the group, for myself too, to kind of give me that freedom to find ways to break down defenses, to kind of find, you know, a way to kind of get the final ball into the attacking third.
Hector Herrera joining us here, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Hector, some thoughts on Sporting Kansas City and the challenges they will pose in a single elimination game.
It's been a rival this fin de semana, un equipo pues un partido desde de vida de muerte contra Sporting Kansas City.
Es un equipo que está pasando un buen momento, que ha hecho una gran eliminatoria con San Luis. Va a exigir que estemos a nuestro mejor nivel para poder seguir en la competición, ¿no? Un equipo que juega muy bien a la pelota, que sale bien al contragolpe, que tiene jugadores individualmente buenos y bueno, hay que estar preparados para el día domingo estar en el mejor nivel porque el partido lo va a necesitar.
The team is really one of the most informed teams of the league right now. I mean, they just also upset St. Louis, the top seed here in the Western Conference. And we have to be at our best to advance to the conference final. I think this is a team that can attack in two different ways. They're going to want the ball, but it could also hurt you on the counterattack. So we'll definitely have to be at our best to, whether it's weathering the storm or propose a game here on Sunday here at Shell Energy Stadium.
Hector, you've been in so many big games, big moments, World Cups. I mean, it goes on and on. It's a remarkable career from someone looking on the outside. It's a remarkable career. At this stage now, what is your biggest motivation as a footballer?
El jugar. Creo que es el sueño que yo siempre tuve de chiquito, jugar al fútbol, y hoy en día que lo hago profesionalmente sigo soñando con eso, ¿no? Sigo despertándome todas las mañanas con ganas de venir aquí a entrenar, estar conmigo, con mis compañeros y poder entrar a la cancha y darlo todo, ¿no? Como cuando era chiquito. Yo creo que eso es lo que a mí me sigue motivando, ¿no? Y como equipo creo que, pues, el ganar la MLS Cup, creo que eso es la gran motivación que tenemos ahora mismo.
Easily, or just to put it kind of bluntly, but it's just to play. I want to play. This is a dream that I had as a kid, to play professionally. Now that I'm at this level as an adult and as a professional, I mean, I still look forward to coming to training and kind of getting to know my teammates and kind of going through the day-to-day. It's definitely just I still dream about important games and kind of these scenarios that we're in right now. This is my goal when I got here, getting Houston back to a level where they're playing in important matches, these do-or-die scenarios. So that's what motivates me. And when we look at what motivates the team, I mean, we want to win. When we look at what our goals are, we want to win in MLS Cup.
Hector Herrera joining us here, and we really appreciate this. As far as I'm concerned, watching you this closely this year, to me, there's no player in Major League Soccer that made as big an impact on one particular franchise as you did. I mean, I've made that very clear just from the outside, if that means anything to anybody. But when you think about this team and you think about the future, and then when you first got here, you had to become the leader of this team. I don't think there's any question. We expected Hector Herrera to be the leader. Was it difficult to become the leader of this group?
Cuando uno se fija en lo que ocurrió el año pasado, pues uno supo que usted iba a jugar un papel importante como líder del grupo. ¿Fue trabajoso jugar ese papel tan rápido tras llegar a cada ciudad y al equipo?
No, porque yo nunca vine pensando que yo tenía que ser el líder de este equipo, ¿no? Creo que esa es mi forma de ser, ¿no? No me puse ese papel encima de mí para sacar el equipo, ¿no? Creo que es una forma mía de ser en el día a día y en el trabajo, ¿no? Obviamente que va acompañado de la llegada de nuevos entrenadores, de nuevos jugadores que han venido cada uno a aportar su granito de arena para que esto vaya mejor, ¿no? Yo siempre lo he dicho que el gran éxito de nosotros que hemos tenido esta temporada ha sido la unión, la alegría que hay dentro del grupo. Creo que eso es algo, una pieza fundamental, ¿no? Si no hubiéramos formado ese gran grupo, hubiese sido difícil todo lo que estamos consiguiendo hasta el día de hoy, ¿no? Sabíamos que iba a ser muy difícil conseguir cosas y poner a este equipo a competir, pero bueno, lo hemos logrado hasta el día de hoy, pero queremos seguir logrando cosas importantes con el club hasta quedar en la historia de esta institución.
Glenn, when I arrived, I mean, overall, I didn't think that I didn't come with that thought, right? I am who I am. I wasn't necessarily seeking a label. I think when you kind of look at the day-to-day, I mean, I'm always going to be there to push my teammates. And now with the new coaching staff, certain things have changed, and we're all working towards the same goal. When I kind of look at kind of what the results are, I mean, our success is due to the unity of the group and the harmony you see day-to-day. And without that, I mean, label or not, whoever the leader is, we wouldn't be where we are. It comes down to the group, and it hasn't been easy. But, you know, we're definitely looking at the results as far as a group and kind of how we got to this point. And it's kind of been able, you've been able to see that here on the field. And the one thing I can say is that we're not done. We definitely want more. And I hope that fans can see that and will see that here on Sunday when we show up on the field.
Final question, Hector. And again, we thank you very much for your time here. This is exceptional. We've seen you out in the community doing so many things for the club. So we thank you for that as well. You have a beautiful family, and I see you celebrate with them during the games. Are they a prime source of motivation?
Sí, que tiene una familia linda que has visto disfrutar y celebrar con ellos después de los partidos. ¿Qué tanto te motiva ellos en tu día a día?
Muchas gracias. Ellos son el motor, la razón de mi existir. Yo siempre lo he dicho que por ellos me levanto todos los días y salgo siempre a dar lo mejor de mí y juego con muchas ganas porque ellos me vean bien, me vean disfrutar y que con las victorias ellos puedan ser felices, ¿no? Son la parte más importante de mi vida, que no cambiaría por nada del mundo.
They're my motor. They're my reason for being. I do what I do is so that, you know, they can also take part in this journey. You know, I've given my all. They see that. I want them to enjoy this experience as well, whether it's after a good day at training, after a good match. They also see the other side of it. So they are the most important part of my life because they're there for everything, for the highs and the lows. But I definitely look forward to sharing many, many more memorable moments with them here shortly.
Okay, that does it tonight for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Always a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, you need the best. The best is the Daspit Law Firm. They will fight for your right for compensation, work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. So a big thank you to John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, for getting us on the air. Also, Hugh O'Connor's I-10 Marquee Entertainment Center. Get over there. This is real pub style soccer watching, pub food, whiskey offering, beer, Danish Inspirations, modern contemporary furniture, DanishInspirations.com, Cactus Music, and of course, LamontBrands.com for your Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats to benefit the 501c charity Snowdrop Foundation for Guillermo Lazo Romero. A reminder here too, we will be back on the air 8 o'clock Central Time Saturday for the Dynamo LAFC on your soccer station right here, ESPN 97.5. Get the podcast of this show at Spotify, Apple, and Google. And until next Tuesday night, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.